Blog Talk Radio.
Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Get ready to be the best you can be. Stay tuned for the Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules. Welcome to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful, cool, clean, and economically thriving Southern California. You know, I am living in paradise, and I invite you all to begin to live in your paradise as well. Tonight, we have information that will let you take the first step in understanding the 50 trillion cells in your body that makes up your paradise. Dr. Bruce Lipton is with us tonight sharing some absolutely incredible information and confirmation that our thoughts do create matter. So stay with us. Now, last weekend, I had the wonderful pleasure of attending Lee Harris and Story Waters seminar in Los Angeles that was called A Call to Awaken. It was an incredible, absolutely incredible experience. For those of you who are looking for a transformation, I would like to recommend Limitlessness Seminars. It was absolutely transforming. The energy was incredible, and I can still feel the effects of it. So the only thing I can say is wow, wow, wow. Visit limitless.com and check out the next seminar, because I really think this is something you won't want to miss. I also want to let you know that the month of August is very exciting, starting off actually with last Friday's 888 meditation for peace and prosperity. Now, even though 888 has passed, that's okay. You can still go back and listen to it and still reap the benefits, because thousands and thousands of people participated and energized it with their love and energy. So just take advantage of this. The more peace and prosperity energy we can share with each other, the better off the entire planet is. Now, next week, we have HeartMath Institute's Howard Martin with us to tell us how to access the power of your heart's intelligence to improve your life through scientifically proven program. Then on next Thursday, we have Rosemary Heenan, the heart activist, who will be telling us how to break out of the boxes of self-imposed restrictions and get into the loving energy of your heart. And then after that, we have medical pioneer Bernie Siegel, who was one of the first MDs to fully understand and promote the mind-body connection in the early 80s. His book, Love, Medicine, and Miracles, had such a dramatic and profound impact on my life personally. I am really looking forward to talking with Dr. Siegel. And then, the final week of August, we have Robert Holden, PhD, coming to us from London. You may have seen him recently on Oprah talking about his happiness project. He will be talking to us about his new book called Happiness Now, which offers profound hope and healing to a generation that is often too busy chasing happiness instead of being able to truly experience it. Another great show not to be missed. So on with tonight's show with Dr. Bruce Lipton. His book, The Biology of Belief, is groundbreaking in the field of a new biology called epigenetics. Dr. Lipton is the former medical school professor and research cellular biologist. His experiments and that of other leading-edge scientists have examined in great detail the processes by which cells receive information. The implication of this research radically change our understanding of life. It shows that genes and DNA do not control our biology, that instead, DNA is controlled by signals from outside the cells, including energetic messages emanating from our positive and negative thoughts. Dr. Lipton's profoundly hopeful synthesis of the last and best research in cell biology and quantum physics is being hailed as a major breakthrough, showing that our bodies can be changed as we retrain our thinking. Well, welcome, Dr. Lipton, to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Well, thanks, Julie. I'm so happy to have this opportunity to be on the air and share some wonderful information.
Thank you. I am thrilled that you're here. Now, that begs the first question. What is epigenetics?
Well, interestingly enough, what most of us have been programmed with in our education and through the media, even to today, is something that is called genetic control, which just literally means control by genes. Epigenetic control is profoundly different, and the prefix epi means above. Like when I say the word epidermis, that means the layer above the skin. So when I say epigenetic control, then that literally means control above the genes. And this is a profoundly new view of how life works. The old view, genetic control, essentially says that our traits and characters and all aspects of our lives are in some way controlled by the genes that we inherited. So that sort of makes us a victim in that we didn't pick the genes and we can't change the genes and they control our lives. Then we're sort of like backseat drivers with the genes driving our biological vehicles. The new view, epigenetic control, reveals that the genes control nothing, that genes are exactly what we've always said they were. They're blueprints. And the relevance about that is that blueprints, I mean, if you go to an architect's office and you ask an architect, is that particular blueprint on or off? And they would look at you in this quizzical look like, well, what are you talking about? There's no on and off to a blueprint. It's a blueprint. And this is the wonderful part of the new biology, the new epigenetics. It says, yes, the DNA represents blueprints, but it's a contractor that actually selects the blueprints and can modify the blueprints to create whatever it's trying to construct. So when you look at the life of a human being, you recognize that the cells have genes in them, and the genes are blueprints, and then you say, well, who's the contractor? And the contractor turns out to be the nervous system, because its function is to look at the world and then send information to the cells, and that information is used to select and modify the genes so that the biology is always adjusting to the environment, and this is what keeps a living thing alive.
Wow, that's interesting.
Well, it's interesting because I said the first one, genetic control, you're a victim because you didn't pick the genes and they control you. But the new one, epigenetic control, puts the nervous system, more specifically the operation of the nervous system, which we'll call the mind, between the environment and the genes. So that all of a sudden it says that the mind controls genetic expression. And why that's relevant is we have the power to change our minds. And if we can do that, then we can change our biology and our genetics and our lives. And this is actually what's always been demonstrated, but people, looking at the old belief system, look at anybody who changes their lives with their beliefs as strange or from California.
We are a bunch of fruitcakes out here in California.
Well, you know, I that's why I live here. It's a ground that allows this new thought to come into play much faster than other parts of the country, and yet is why is it important? Because when you then recognize that people's lives are a lot different out here in California, that in some way it's because they're thinking differently. And then that means, their minds are operating in a different way and controlling their biology in that different form as well.
Interesting. You said in your book that you weren't really spiritual until you made some discoveries. What were the discoveries that kind of transformed your life?
Well, as you mentioned, when I got into science, I preferred that over the path of spiritual information, because in my personal history, there were a lot of people who spouted spiritual information, and but their lives never really looked as good as the words they were talking about. So I said, maybe that's not the direction. I think I should go into science, because that's where everybody believes the same thing, in a sense, and that what we believe on this side of the world and the other side of the world, they have the same belief. So I thought science was where to go. I avoided spirituality, got into science, and followed through that whole belief system of the fact that the human body is a biochemical machine controlled by genes, and bought into the mechanics of a physical universe. And that's the way I look at biology. But my work on stem cells, which I started in 1967, which I always think about humorously, because people think that stem cells are something like relatively new, and I was actually culturing stem cells 40 years ago. And the work from that presaged this new field of epigenetics, because the work from that revealed that genetically identical cells, when placed in different environments, would turn into different kinds of cells. So I could take genetically identical cells and put some in one petri dish with one culture medium and they become muscle. Take the same identical cells in another petri dish with another variation on the medium and they became bone cells. And in a third dish, put even the same genetically identical cells and, again, with changes in the medium, create fat cells. And very logical, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to answer the question, well, what controlled the fate of the cells? Well, obviously, the first step is they were all genetically identical. So it wasn't the genes that controlled the fate, it was the environment in which the cells ended up. So all of a sudden it says, oh, the information from the environment is shaping biology. Well, this opened my eyes, because here I've been teaching medical students for years that, genes were controlling all these traits, and yet the cells in my tissue culture experiments revealed, no, the genes were responding to information in the environment. And why that ultimately became important is because in medical understanding, each human being is different, because each one of us has a self. And I said, well, how do you know that's true? And the answer is, because if you take Julie's cells and put them into Bob, Bob's immune system is going to say, this is not self, and reject those cells. You take my cells, put them into Julie, Julie will reject my cells, because her immune system will say, these are not self. And so the point is, well, every cell then must have an identity, and of a self that distinguishes it from other people. When you get down to the nitty-gritty, as I was working with the molecular level of the cell's brain, the membrane, the truth is that the self is represented by a set of antennas, like television antennas, little protein molecules, antennas, that are built into the surfaces of our cells. So each cell most every one of our cells in our body has the self receptors. That's what it's called by science, self-receptors. When you want to transplant somebody's tissues, you want to match as many of these self-receptor antennas on the donor as on the recipient, because the closer they're matched, the closer the two cells are in identity, and they don't have such an aggressive immune rejection of a graft. So we're looking and saying, oh yeah, the self is represented by these sets of antennas on the surfaces of our cells. And then it's like, well, wait a minute. The antennas are exactly what they are, receivers. That's why they're called self-receptors. They're antennas, like television antennas, receiving a broadcast. And at one point, it's like at that moment, I finally understood this whole connection. I said, oh, my God, the identity broadcast that is picked up by these self-receptors is something that's out in the environment, and it's not inside the cells. And it's, all of a sudden, I said, oh, my God, I, that thinking I, is not inside the body. I'm part of the environment that is received by the community of cells that are making up my body. So it was like, in my whole shocked life, because I was thinking, teaching and believing in the science, of course, was, oh, we're just biochemical machines that accidentally assembled like this. Then to find out, no, these are indeed biological devices, but they're like television sets, in the sense that they're receiving a broadcast of an identity, each one of us with a different broadcast, but the broadcast comes from the field, the outside. And at that moment of recognizing my identity wasn't broadcast from the outside, then immediately said, oh my goodness, well, you can't die. You're not even in the self. And that blew my mind, of course. And then it also brought up the serious reality is, if a future embryo is created that has the same exact set of receptor antennas on the cells that I have today, it will pick up my broadcast again at another time. And all of a sudden, it's like, reincarnation. Oh, my God. It's like, here I am going from this mechanical nuts and bolts biology to a spiritual guy talking about reincarnation. It was like in 1 minute, actually, in my life, that's how fast it changed when all of a sudden I understood the nature of the mechanism of how the cell controls its biology. And it's taken me years to consider the consequences of that realization. And yet the joy about it is, I was a student of this. I mean, I was like the cells were teaching me about biology. And rather than me saying, okay, cells, I want to see how you're controlled. Let me tell you how you're controlled. You're controlled by genes. And then doing an experiment, I sort of like, no, you can show me. I won't ask you. I won't tell you how you're controlled. And when I understood the nature of the control, it basically said, oh, my God, we go from victim into creator. And the significance about that is how powerful we are in controlling our biology through our mind and how, unfortunately, uninformed we are of this information because we're still being programmed with the belief that we're victims. And there's an unfortunate side effect of that programming, and that is if you own that you're a victim of life's circumstances, that you're a victim of your heredity, then you realize, well, if you're a victim, there's no way for you to help yourself. That, you know, you're a victim. You must find a rescuer. And then all of a sudden you realize how humans have continuously looked for power outside of themselves, seeing themselves and being programmed as victims and not recognizing they've always been powerful. And it's neat because if you understand the biological mechanism of how the awareness controls biology, then you recognize a simple fact. We are all equally powerful creators on this planet. And then you have to stop and say, well, wait a minute. There are many very, very powerful people and very many, many unpowerful people on this planet. There's a hierarchy. Where did those other people get all that extra power from? And here's the joke. By programming us, they took away our power. They didn't get any extra power. Everybody has the same amount of power. But we have bought a perception, and here's where the crux of the issue is. Perception is a program in the mind. We have bought a mind belief of our being powerless. And since biology is run by the mind, and the mind says that we are powerless, then the mind will actually create the condition of powerless in our lives.
Now, that's a powerful statement. So we can retrain the mind or take back our beliefs at any time.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because we talk about it. It's almost like, okay, oh, the new agey talk. Let's talk about like belief in biology and mind over body. And we talk about new agey stuff. And then I say, wait a minute. It's an established fact and has been an established fact in medical education for 100 years, actually 50 years scientifically, that the mind is one of the primary controllers of our entire biology and our health. In this regard, the medical sciences, they talk about what's called the placebo effect.
Right.
And the placebo effect is an acknowledged scientific awareness that the mind's belief that something is going to be a benefit to them will enable a sugar pill to create very profound changes in biology when the pill has no, biological relevance. And so, yes, everybody talks about, oh, yeah, okay, I know the placebo effect. That's where very positive thinking allows something that has no effect to create an effect. And we all acknowledge that. And yet what we fail to acknowledge is something that science mentions but even gets far less coverage, even to the medical student, and that is something called the nocebo effect. And the nocebo effect means it's a negative thought that can actually lead to disease and death. So it's interesting. Placebo is a positive thought can lead to good health. a nocebo, a negative thought, can lead to disease and death. And then it's like, it's not whether you think positive thoughts or negative thoughts. The biology of this is that thought is the powerful shaper of our lives, period. And when you own that, then you recognize that whatever thoughts you have, if they're positive, then they will facilitate a positive expression. But if they're negative thoughts, then by the definition, they will also manifest the complement of that negative thought. So our lives are actually a physical image of our thoughts. And why this is important is because the old biology said, no, your lives are the physical image of your genes. You're a victim. Live with it. The new understanding says, no, your lives are controlled by your perceptions, and they control your genes, and therefore, if you change your perceptions, you change your genes, and therefore you change your lives. So all of a sudden it says, oh my God, we're not victims. We're masters. We're creators. We create with our beliefs. And then you feed right back in placebo, nocebo, which is what we already recognize, and say, yeah, if you don't believe that you are powerful, that's a nocebo belief, that will take away your power. And we've been programmed, more or less, to you know, say, well, who do we think we are? Well, we're just people, you know. And, the concepts of empowerment are completely programmed out of our lives. And since our beliefs control our lives, then the programming of empowerment is manifested as an disempowered population.
So what's been the reaction from the medical community? You know, I can go to the doctors now, and it's like they've never even heard of this.
Well, this is the problem with the situation, is that the medical practice is based on medical education. And the concept of what we're talking about in regard to epigenetics is just now entering into the field of academics. It's been in the field of research for years, but now that it's okay, it's been demonstrated so many times now to be real. Now they say, okay, now that we can demonstrate it's real, we're going to put it in textbooks. Yeah, but those textbooks are the ones that are coming out just now or tomorrow. And that the trained physician has no resource to go back to in their education to acknowledge this, because there was no foundation in their education of this brand new science. So it's real interesting is that new thought will ultimately change the civilization, because new thought is new beliefs, and since belief controls biology, then new beliefs will have a profound effect on the biology that we have now.
So are you saying that perhaps there's a timeline of maybe 20, 30, 40 years before we won't have to be dependent upon the pharmaceuticals for health?
Well, I would have to say yes, but I'd have to say maybe only about 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Oh, how wonderful.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because there's been a history from people like the Mayans, but there's also other cultures about 2012 being an ending period, an ending of an old way of life, not the ending of life, but an ending of an old way of life and the transition into a new way of life. That's what it represents, 2012. And it's interesting because enough people are also believing that now that in something called a morphic field that was suggested by Rupert Sheldrake, a wonderful biologist, is that how thoughts actually create energy waves in the field. The more people sharing the thought, the more powerful those waves become, and at some point those waves actually influence our lives. So 2012 appears to be happening, whether it's actually real or maybe because now so many people believe in it to be real, that it will manifest. So there's a change, and I'm already excited about the change because I understand through the nature of the biology of belief and how cultures create beliefs and how culture shapes our biology and our lives and the world that we live in, that when the beliefs of a culture change, then that means the culture changes along with it. This is why we've gone through several cycles of different cultures in Western civilization. I mean, just to go back historically, there was an animistic period in Western civilization, which is like the Native Americans or the Druids in Europe, where nature and God and spirit were one and the same thing. Everything had spirit in it. All the animals and people and everything had spirit. And then we went to polytheism, where spirit was beginning to be taken out of things and coalesced into figurehead spirits. And then we went into monotheism, and that's when all the spirit was taken out of the entire earth and sent somewhere else. And the significance is every time a new society, animism, polytheism, monotheism has come in, it's come in because the beliefs have changed. So it says, I'll give you actually more very specifically, what beliefs change, and when these beliefs change, this is what causes civilization to change. It's the beliefs that answer what are called the perennial questions. These are three questions. How did we get here? Why are we here? And now that we are here, how do we make the best of it? And whoever answers those questions to the satisfaction of the mass of the population, that entity or organization becomes the truth provider for that civilization. Well, over time, the answers have changed how we got here and why we're here. So the preceding civilization was called monotheism, where the church ruled civilization, and their answers to the question how we got here, divine intervention, why are we here, to live out plays of morality, and now that we're here, how do we make the best of it, follow the scripture. Those are the answers. But that changed. Those answers changed with the coming of modern science that evolved ultimately with Charles Darwin. When the theory of evolution was accepted, then civilization brought new answers to the questions. No longer did we get here because of divine intervention. Modern science says we got here because of random genetic accidents. Then say, why are we here? Well, the church was saying we were here for plays of morality, but science says, well, there's no reason for you to be here because you got here by accident, and since our accident has no intention or purpose, then we're here by accident with no intention. And then the third one is the most important difference, too, is that under monotheism, it's, well, how does one comport their life while being on this planet? And the answer is live by the laws of the scripture, which implied a basic morality to living life on the planet. But once we bought into Darwinian belief that it was genetic accidents, there's no purpose here, and how do we live it? The answer was a struggle for the survival of the fittest. And all of a sudden, that's the belief that shaped civilization. So ever since then, we bought into a world that's based on competition and beating the other one out in this evolutionary race for survival. And so that shaped the character of our civilization. And so why is this relevant? Because the new edge of science has now provided such profound new insights that the answers that we've lived by for the last 100 or so years have now been changed. And when every time the answers to those questions have been changed, the civilization has changed. Well, the answers to those questions have changed in the last 10 or 15 years. And it takes another 10 or 50, 10 years maybe to fully get the population into it, but the answers have changed so profoundly that the population is moving in a different direction. And the answers to the questions now are, how did you get here? And the answer is actually, if you understand the nature of the new biology, through a process, listen to this, of both creation and evolution, meaning that in the world of physics, we talk about energy fields, and as Einstein made a very important quote about the energy field, he said, the field is the sole governing agency of the particle. What Einstein meant was the invisible field is the shaper of matter. So what's interesting is the field existed, but it took a period of time for physical matter to ultimately conform to the field. So in one sense, the field pre-existed the structure, but the structure took a period of evolution to arrive at its destination. So we got here through a creation and evolution. And they say, why are we here? Well, a new understanding of biology is that the environment isn't based on competition, Darwinian competition. The environment is based on cooperation, that all organisms that create the biosphere are in cooperation with each other. The only ones that are not in cooperation at the present time are the humans. And this is why nature is trying to squeeze us out of the picture, because all other organisms cooperate in maintaining harmony in the environment, and humans as a species have come into the environment and begun to destroy the environment and the harmony, and nature is in a backlash that is forcing an extinction of a life form that is threatening nature. And so whether it's through diseases or social crisis or whatever it is, humanity at this very moment is facing, like, oh my God, we're facing an extinction crisis that's imminent. And why is this relevant is because it's giving humanity an option right now. It says, well, you can continue to do what you're doing, and you already see where that's going, or you can change your way of life. And if you change your way of life and start to conform to the harmony of the world that we live in and the nature of the biology, then you have an opportunity of evolving. So I sit here looking at the crises in front of us and delighted. Well, most people are looking at the crises in front of them. They're living in, oh, my God, this thing is falling apart. And I'm excited because the next level of evolution is in process right now. And the new belief systems that will shape a civilization that are based on harmony and spiritual coherence and the forces that shape the field and our ability to be self-empowered, that's the new thought. So it says the future in front of us is fabulous.
Wow.
When we own as a collective population the science that I was fortunate enough to see, oh, well, I guess now 30-some years ago, 40 years ago, and that is that we have the power to change our biology and the lives that we are living by the power or owning of who we are. After centuries of being programmed as victims, we are going to recognize our mastery. And when people do this, then power will be recovered by the masses. And if you just go out and do a poll of the masses, you say, do you want war? And the answer is no. Do you want everybody to be happy? Yes. Do you want everybody to be healthy? Yes. And the masses, that would be a general answer to the question. And if everybody in the masses becomes a creator, then that image becomes the culture we'll live in.
Oh, goodness. That sounds wonderful. And it is your opinion that we're moving towards that knowledgeable base. Right.
Absolutely. That's why I said the new science has made itself present in the research field, but has not entered into the mainstream media, so that you can still get mainstream stories about genes controlling this and genes controlling that. It's like, wait a minute, scientists know that this is totally untrue at the leading edge of research and have known this for a period of time. It's the general public that is still being programmed. And if I was to put some momentum behind that programming, of course I'd put it into the pharmaceutical industry, which only thrives because we find ourselves to be victims.
Right, so we need to get that taken off of our TV sets then.
Absolutely. That has been one of the big declines of our health industry is ever since that's been put into place. The health of the United States has gotten far worse because people are buying drugs. Let's cut to the bottom line.
Okay.
The original understanding of medicine was a compassionate healing art where you help relieve the suffering of people. Today's version of medicine is corporate medicine. And the difference between corporate medicine and personal medicine is corporate medicine is for the survival of the corporation. Yeah, but what's the corporation? What's the mission of a corporation? I don't care which one it is. And the answer is to make a profit for the shareholders. And why is that relevant? Then you stop for a second and say, wait a minute. You have a corporation that makes money off of sick people, and that you are creating this big income from sick people. How do you create an income from sick people? And the answer is you make a lot of money off of them and give them back fewer services and take more money in. That's a corporate drive, okay? And then you recognize why the United States pays the most money for health care and has one of the lowest levels of health care of Western nations.
So it's the pharmaceuticals' intention to perpetuate the idea that we're victims and that we have no power.
Well, but that would be their undoing, and it's interesting because we recognize that we can heal with thoughts and energy and all these aspects of a so-called frou-frou California new biology, but the reality is, no, this is current quantum biophysics, and this is the way it works. But let me give you a parallel so you can see why the connection, and the parallel is this. Today, the fossil fuel industry is just controlling the planet, and the idea about it is that they suggest that that's how you get energy. And then I ask you a question. I think you're quite aware, probably, that there are far better ways to create energy and more efficient and less destructive than burning fossil fuel. And the answer is right. And then I say, where are they? And then you have to say, and the answer is, it's not in the interest of the fossil fuel companies to allow the development of those technologies because that undermines their profit. Now I say, okay, same parallel, go into the medical field and say, but you can heal yourself with your thoughts and your energy as compared to buying pharmaceutical drugs. Why isn't energy medicine being propagated in the world? And the answer is, it's not in the interest of an industry that sells drugs to promote a healing that doesn't use drugs. And then all of a sudden you see, medicine is a handmaiden to the pharmaceutical industry.
So I'm hearing you say that we can break ourselves away from fossil fuels altogether.
Oh, absolutely, and it's a necessity. It's a necessity because, let's put it this way, if you look at the evolutionary history of the planet, every organism that has been here and sustained itself through evolution has been an organism that has always lived off the renewable resources of a planet and never undermined the planet by taking resources out that can never be put back in again, except for humans. And basically it says we cannot live or sustain ourselves on an unsustainable resource. So the point is, well, whether you think we're going to live without it or not, it's a necessity because we're already beginning to feel the choke of not having it there. Mm-hmm. And the reality is this will then generate, you know, there's an old phrase, necessity is the mother of invention. And so, yes, all new things are going to happen. They've already happened, but they've been suppressed for so long. But they're beginning to manifest now when people are saying, okay, we must do something different. Of course, we hope that's what the opinion of the public is, because there's still a concerted private profiteering industry that says, we could always find oil in Alaska and the national parks and everywhere else, and the reality is, look, it's a losing proposition. Time to jump to the new stuff anyway.
So can we create things from our thoughts? Can we create form into matter with just our thoughts, our minds?
Absolutely. Here's the interesting part. There's been a disconnection between quantum physics and the world that we live in. And that quantum physics, when it came in, didn't get rid of the standard, what we call Newtonian or classic physics. And Newtonian physics is the one that medicine is based on. And briefly, just Newtonian physics is a perception that you can understand and manipulate the world you live in by just working with matter. Don't have to invoke invisible forces or spirit or God or anything like that. Just deal with the world of matter. But in 1920s, physicists said, oh my God, that belief system is totally flawed, because the matter that they're looking at actually isn't matter in reality, because if you take a look deep inside that atom that we look as little marbles and ball bearings, turns out the atom is made out of energy. And the whole world of physics started to recognize the value of the energy over the matter. That's why Einstein's quote was so important. It's the energy, the field, that governs the particle. And Newtonian physics ignores the field and just looks at the particles. And so Newtonian medicine looks at the body as just a medical thing. And yet the new medicine is the energy. The field is more quantum physics oriented. But here's the fundamental understanding that quantum physics has found in the very beginning of quantum physics. And it created the weirdness of quantum physics. And it goes like this. They were looking into the atom to see what it was made out of. And they wanted to know, are the things that make up the inside of the atom physical particles, or are they actually energy? And energy is not physical, and so particles and energy cannot be the same. You can't be a particle and an energy at the same time. They both cannot be the same. So the question is, well, what are the particles or elements that make up an atom? So it turns out, if you think the atom is made out of physical particles and design an experiment to show those physical particles, you see them. But here's the surprise. If you think that the atom is made out of invisible energy waves and design an experiment to show invisible energy waves, they appear as invisible energy waves. So the question is, well, how can an atom be made of both particles or, you know, and energy? It's either or. And it turns out, and here's the answer, and it's surprisingly short. Reality. The answer is the observer creates the reality. And this is very relevant, for the simple point is we are the observers of the reality that we live in. And according to the principles of quantum physics, consciousness is shaping the real world that we live in. And in fact, it's so interesting that Stephen Hawking, the great cosmologist, recently in the last year published a paper that said human consciousness is influencing the unfolding of the cosmos. And so you say, well, what does all this mean? It says, if you understand the new physics, our consciousness is creating this particular world, which is, and our consciousness is our perception and our belief about the world, so that we create the world we believe in.
Wow, that was brilliantly said. And that's how you explain the law of attraction.
Basically what it's all about. And then the people will say, well, come on, Julie, you know, I always have these very positive thoughts and I never get that. The first problem that we find is that although belief creates reality, our first belief is, well, obviously our beliefs don't do that because look at my reality. and now here's where the problem comes from. And when we understand this, which is part of the new thinking that changes our civilization, yes, the perceptions, the belief of the observer creates the reality, and the significance about that is, well, then our mind creates the reality. I say, yes, that's absolutely right. And then I go, wait, though, you have two parts to the mind that are separate parts. They're not the same. They work together. One is called the conscious mind, and one is called the subconscious mind. And here's the profound difference: the conscious mind is a small part of the whole brain, so it's a small part, that is the connection between our source, our identity, our spiritual nature, if people want to say that. Now here's the part. The conscious mind has your personal wishes and your desires, your ambitions, your aspirations for life. If I ask you, Julie, what do you want from your life? The answer you give me will come from the conscious mind. That's the creative mind. And then we have the subconscious mind. Well, it's a mind, but it's more like a machine. Its function is to record experiences like a tape player, and when you push the button, then you can play the program back again, so that if you learn how to drive a car today, you don't have to tomorrow get in the car and relearn how to drive a car. You already learned how to drive a car. You know how to walk. You don't have to think about walking. Once you learn it, it's in the program, and then you push the button and the program plays. So we recognize there's two parts of the mind. One is programmed. Then just plays tapes and you push the button and play it. And the other one is creative. That's the conscious one. And the conscious one has your desires and wishes, and the other one has programs in it. And here's a catch. Listen to this. The fundamental programs in our subconscious mind were downloaded into our minds before we were 5 years of age. We were like booted up as a computer, in a sense, by the programs that we got from our parents and our siblings and our community. And those programs go into the subconscious mind. Well, now stand back. We have the mind controlling our reality, but we have two parts of the mind, conscious and subconscious, and the conscious is what you want. That's the one that has positive thinking in it. And now the neuroscientists have told us an astonishing fact, that the conscious mind only works at most of about 5% of the day. That means that you're controlling your life with what you want, your desires and your wishes, about 5% of the day. 95% of the day, the life is being programmed by the subconscious mind. Yeah, but that's when we go back and say, but the primary programs in the subconscious mind came from other people. and they don't necessarily have to support in any way what you desire in your conscious mind. And then here comes the problem. If the programs in the subconscious mind conflict with the desires of the conscious mind, I know who's going to win. And the answer is the subconscious mind, because it works 95% of the day. So here's the problem. People are out there with great desires and wishes and positive things, thinking, I want health, I want to be wealthy, I want to have a great social life. These are great positive desires and wishes. Yes, that's in your conscious mind working 5% of the day, and yet most of us are hobbled by the programs we received from growing up, and almost inevitably they were disempowering. You can't heal yourself. Who do you think you are? You're not good enough. You don't deserve things. You're not smart enough. The things that children hear, these are programs. And no matter what age you are, 95% of your life is coming from that edge of the mind, the programs. And since most of the programs are limiting or self-sabotaging, no wonder our world is a difficult place to maneuver, because our conscious desires and wishes are constantly thwarted by programs that tell us who do we think we are, programs of limitation and sabotage. And yet we walk every day down the street thinking we're controlling our lives, when neuroscientists have now revealed, no, you're not. It's the subconscious, and that's somebody else's programs.
So how do we retrain the mind to think positively?
It's not to retrain the mind to thinking positively. Thinking is the conscious mind. It's to retrain the program that took away our health and our abilities. And as I said, these are inevitable programs that children are, every time they start to exceed too far, there's a tendency to push them back down, be more average again. And so how do you reprogram this? Well, there's a whole variety of different ways. The first way that, because it was the first way that I was familiar with at the time about the 70s, the end of the 70s, when I started to recognize, oh my God, my nocebo thoughts, my negative thoughts are 70% or more of my belief system, which is what conventional psychologists tell us. All of us have about 70% of our thoughts running through our mind are negative and redundant, which means, well, those are the ones that are shaping our life. I had to start paying attention and say, every time a negative thought would come in, I'd have to say, wait, stop, cancel, and I'd think of a positive thought. I found out later this process is essentially called Buddhist mindfulness. So basically it says if you live in the conscious moment and pay attention, then you can steer the vehicle of your life. But if your mind is wandering, which almost all of our minds do, this is why the subconscious runs the show, because think about it. Most of the time your mind is wandering, thinking about the future, the past, how are you going to get the money to pay for this, or what's going on the job over here, and you're thinking. Well, if the conscious mind's thinking, then the obvious question comes up, if the conscious mind's thinking, then who's running the show? And that's why 95% of the show is run by the subconscious mind, because that's its job. So what I recognize, if you start controlling your thoughts, you control your life. And can you make a beautiful life if you control your thoughts? And the answer is almost everybody in the listening audience has done that already. And if I refer back to when it was, maybe they'll light up and think about it. It goes like this. The day you fell in love, no matter what your life was like the day up to that moment, the day you fell in love, your life was transformed for a period of time called the honeymoon. And during that honeymoon, everything was beautiful and life was wonderful and you were healthier and you had so much energy you could make love for days in a row and everything was exquisite. You looked at life through rose-colored glasses and it was that way. And all of a sudden I said, that was an example of being mindful and being conscious, because when you're in the honeymoon period, rather than relying on the automatic programs of the subconscious mind that control your behavior all the time, you become much more hyper-vigilant of yourself. You become conscious of yourself because you're selling yourself to this person. You want them to see you in the way that you really are, so you're not leaving anything to chance. You're thinking about what you're saying before you're saying it. It's like the day before you met this love, I say, how long did it take you to get dressed? You say, I was out of the house in 5 or 10 minutes. And I say, oh, you're going on a first date with this person? How long did it take you to get dressed? And all of a sudden it's like, well, that could be an hour or two. And the difference is what? The other day was a habit to get dressed. Today, I'm being self-conscious of getting dressed. And you start to recognize during that period of self-conscious control, that was called the honeymoon. And when the honeymoon ends is when you went back to life was being too busy to keep being focused on reflecting on yourself, so your mind starts wandering, and then all of a sudden you start playing those programs that were sitting in there all the time but didn't play up until now. And this is the funny part, because this is when your partner looks at you someday and says, who are you? Because for the first time, a whole bunch of programs that were automatic have not been playing, all of a sudden start playing, and now there's a different person. So Buddhist mindfulness is very effective, but it's hard to do in a very busy world. Affirmations on a regular, religious, methodical basis, yes, not just every now and then thinking an affirmation thought. No, it's a habituation is what you're doing. That's how you put new programs into the subconscious mind, because the subconscious mind represents habits. Repetitious and religious, like a training program, and that's doable, but there are much faster ways that clinical hypnotherapy and more effective even is a new realm of modalities that are collectively called energy psychology. There are a whole variety of different ways of approaching that, and each one of those in some way is really influencing a process called superlearning, which enables you to reprogram past perceptions and past experiences in a matter of minutes and walk away a changed human being in 10 or 15 minutes. So there's exciting, again, it's a necessity as the mother of invention, and we don't have a lot of time to grab hold of our lives and get ready, because these changes that we're talking about are imminent, and they've been happening day by day and getting more intense day by day, but by the end of the year, it may really heat up, and people are going to start to really be worried, and in that case, they're going to have to learn how they can control their lives. And when they learn this new stuff, they become self-empowered, and that is the big step that gets us out of the chaos that's pending right now. It's great. It's an evolution that is just, that's what's so exciting. It's like, well, you people say, oh, yes, the end of the Roman civilization. And you imagine, wow, that must have, you know, who was there at the last day of the Roman civilization, shut the lights out or whatever. And the fact is, guess what? We're at a moment that in the future they will talk about the last days of the current civilization, which is actually scientific materialism, not monotheism, because our truths are provided by science, not by the church now. And so the last days are happening right now within the next couple of years. So dramatically exciting times. And there are two options as a viewer of what's going on here. One is you stay in the track where we live the lives we always have lived and look at this thing in horror as the evolution is taking on. Or we jump out of the old belief systems and really regain our self-empowerment of our ability to control our lives. And in that process, then watch this chaos that's going on like a show on television and not have it come into your own lives, because we'll be already moving on to the next level of evolution.
Well, this has been a fascinating hour. So far we've learned that death does not exist, reincarnation does exist, and we haven't even touched on the fact that the cells actually have brains themselves.
Well, that's a really nice little quick topic to talk about, because it may put some perspective on all of us to understand who we really are. And it's something that I presented in my medical school lectures, and it starts with this, is that when you look at yourself in the mirror and you see yourself as an individual, free-living entity, that's the first misperception. Because the fact is, you're not a single entity. You are made out of cells. It's the cells that are the living elements in our body. The community of cells makes a human being. So really, in true perception of who we are, we're a giant community of living cells. And our mind is like the collective amoebic consciousness of that community, that there's a relationship between the mind and the population of cells making up our bodies. And that is, first of all, just to give people a little deeper insight, that the cells are essentially miniature people in this regard. Every function that's in our human body is essentially present in every cell in our human body. Every cell has the same functions that we have. They're like miniature people, and they have their own intelligence. I could take them out of the body, put them in a petri dish, and they're intelligent enough to survive and carry on their functions without being in the entire human body. In fact, they're capable of regenerating the human body. There's so much intelligence in them. And why is this relevant? Then I said, well, then let me tell you about the nature of your life. You're a community with individual sentient cells, and your mind is a government. And your mind, if it's a benevolent government, will bring harmony and health to the community of 50 trillion cells. But if your mind is unaware, misprogrammed, or generally not on the right track, then the information it sends to the cells can disrupt the entire community of cells, as a government can disrupt the population that makes up a nation. If a government is defective or disordered, it will destroy the population. Well, this is what's happening in our human body when we own that our mind is the government. And the 50 trillion cells that make up our body are responding to that government as the supreme commander. And if the mind has misperceptions about life, then those misperceptions can actually destroy the civilization and kill it. I'll give you a simple example, Julie. If we had a third person here among us and this person was an anorexic, then you and I would look at them and go, wow, this person's skin and bones right near death. And yet we ask this person, how do you see yourself? Well, they say, when I look in the mirror, I see this overweight, bloated person. And so here's the point. They have a distortion of their perceptions, a distortion of reality. But the cells don't see the reality. The cells respond to the nervous system. The nervous system has the distortion. So the information in the distorted behavior, that information is sent by the brain to coordinate the cells to lose more weight. And the cells continuously doing this ultimately kill themselves. And what was the point? There was nothing wrong with the cells in the body. It was the information that the mind was relaying to the cells, and that the power of the mind is it controls the body. This is what the new biology is all about. So that if we have misperceptions, then those misperceptions can undermine us. And that the new biology is correcting very profound misperceptions that we have bought into, that has disempowered us. And the new beliefs are totally empowered. And when we own this, incorporate it, and make it a way of our lives, then our 50 trillion cells in our bodies can live a full-out harmony. And think about it. Here on the world, we have 6.5 billion people. Inside your body, you got 50 trillion citizens. And if you get blissed out, 50 trillion citizens simultaneously will be blissed out as well. That's a world and a civilization that humanity actually should aspire to.
Wow, I guess we really are powerful, aren't we?
We've always been told that. And we've also been programmed not to believe that. So it's very interesting. There's things called spontaneous remissions. Well, what's that? A person who's been totally counted out by the system, who changed their beliefs, their mind, and in the process recovered spontaneously. That we've always been able to heal ourselves. Placebo effect. Yes, that's the belief system in the mind that healed you, not the sugar pill that healed you. That spiritually... And I wasn't raised in the Christian tradition, so I'm just going to use my plagiarization and not accurate interpretation, but spiritually it says we can renew our lives with our beliefs. And the answer is yes, it's always been true that we heal ourselves by our faith. Yes, because that's our belief that we can be healed. And most importantly is that we've been told that we can do amazing miracles, more so than Jesus could, even better than he could. He said that. But the problem is we don't believe in it. And so everything has been pointed for thousands of years that have been trying to tell us, you are what you believe, and yet we've been programmed to say, no, we're even less than that. We're just victims. And yet we were victims of a belief of being a victim.
Okay. Can we communicate with ourselves? Can they read our emotions? In other words, if we sent ourselves love, would they be able to respond to that?
That's absolutely what it's all about. That's basically how spontaneous remission occurred. But then you have to say, but how come it doesn't work most of the time? The answer is because most of the programs that we got deny that power. So that becomes a wish on the part of the consciousness rather than a command on the part of the subconscious. And that's why it's difficult for people to manifest that. And it's also very important because the concept of emotions, not do the cells feel our emotions. it's real interesting is because I talk about the mind controlling the cells, like the mind is the government and the cells are the population. You know what? The emotion is the population telling the mind what condition it's in. And so it's really the population informing the government saying, look, we're being a little angry here. Maybe we should change the program. And the mind not paying attention, like sometimes our government doesn't pay attention to the people, and ignoring this information and going on regardless of this information into destructive behavior. And this is why it's important to recognize that, yes, our cells are a community. Our mind is a government. And the cells have an opportunity to tell the government about what they think or what, you know, what, how they're responding. We call the communication from the government, I mean from the people, the cells, through the mind, we call those emotions and symptoms. And then you think about it, in our conventional world, the way we perceive these, we look at those as, oh, just confusing issues, and let's cover them up as best we can so we don't have to deal with them, and not recognizing covering up our emotions and symptoms is turning a deaf ear to the 50 trillion cells that make up our body when they're telling us something is either right or not right, and we're not paying attention. And that's when the downfall of a government occurs, when it doesn't listen to the people, or in this case, the cells.
That is an incredibly profound statement. So you would say that it's up to us individually, outside of our community of cells, to really progress up to the next level for all of humanity's survival.
Yeah, and this has unfortunately been very hard, because what are we asking our listeners to consider? And it's like being personally responsible for everything in their lives. And when I used to end my lectures that way, it used to irritate most of the audience, because they sure didn't want to hear that. But it comes down to, ultimately, our lives are a personal responsibility, but when we own it and know how it works, then what becomes a responsibility becomes a joy, because you can create heaven on earth, and that's what the whole history of the human population has been heading for anyway.
Yes, heaven on earth. I love it. As we wind down the show, let me just remind everybody that if you'd like to get more information, go to Dr. Bruce Lipton's website, which is brucelipton.com, and browse around there. It's really a great site. Has all this information, articles, everything. Very, very good site. And for those bookworms out there, if you want to read a book, this is it. The Biology of Belief. It's incredible. Now, you can get it from my profile page right now if you're on it by simply clicking on the picture, and that will take you directly to Amazon. Or you can go to any bookstore. It's there on the shelves, and I can guarantee you, you are just going to find it fascinating. Alrighty then, now that we feel so powerful, I'd like to thank Bruce Lipton. Thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. It has been fantastic. I loved every second of it.
Well, I hope your listeners grab a little of it, because your job is important to, you know, help disseminate this information, which isn't coming from conventional media.
Well, you know, it's people like you who make my job so much easier and a lot of fun.
I appreciate it, and maybe we can do it again sometime.
You can count on it. And to all of the listeners, I hope you enjoyed the show as much as I did, and we will talk to you next week. You have been listening to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio, hosted by Jules Johnson. For more information, go to www.lawofattractiontools.com.